That's my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
Folks, you might not notice it, but we're sober. I know we had some fun the other day with the drunk show. It was great. Joe Patrick rolled around in pain for the next couple of days. Me, I'm not going to lie, I was hungover too. But my name is Matt Baum. I'm one of the hosts of the Two-Headed Nerd, and I'm happy to report that I'm completely stone sober. Joe Patrick is not with me in the ziggurat. He is at home somewhere in Bellevue. I won't reveal where because he's scared of stalkers, but say hello to the kids, Joey.
I don't know what you're talking about. I know how to handle my liquor. I was not hungover the next day.
Everybody on Twitter disagrees. Today we're playing the answer of the week. It's real simple. It goes hand in hand with the question of the week, but you've got to listen to the other show to figure out where the question of the week is. Or you can go to the Two-Headed Nerd forums where we post it. There you can write your answer or you can call our ziggurat hotline, 402-819-4894. Leave us a message or send us an MP3 to twoheadednerd@gmail.com with your answer to the question of the week. But before we get started, I need to know, where did this question come from and what the hell was it?
This week's question came from Anthony. What storyline or miniseries were you enjoying only to have the ending completely let you down?
Okay, Anthony in
thus
Brooklyn.
Thus tarnishing your feeling. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, Anthony.
Thus tarnishing your feeling for the story as a whole.
I just don't want dude getting confused with some other Anthony out there, you know? Yeah. It's a good question. It's a good question. And guess who our very first caller is?
Is it Anthony?
It's Anthony. He hit us first. He did something. I'm not sure what it was, but there was like some effect coming through. It did not translate well. I'm not going to play it because it's rather piercing. I appreciate the effort, though, Anthony. I told Joe it sounded like Yar's revenge. Let's see what your answer was.
Hello, nerds. This is Dan from Brooklyn calling in with my answer for question of the week. And thank you very much for choosing my question.
You're welcome.
The storyline that I'm going to highlight is from Justice League America, issues 26, 27, and 29. In issue 26, it is discovered that Blue Beetle is the victim of a post-hypnotic suggestion implanted by the Queen Bee of Bialia. When she triggers it, he goes on a murderous rampage. He stabs Oberon. He stabs Maxwell Lord. In retrospect, he probably should have taken Maxwell Lord out, but I digress. He kicks Batman in the face, and then he's quickly dispatched by Hunters and Batman. Issue 27, it's revealed by Batman that, hey, you know, you gave me a rough run. And Batman is like, holy cow, I did. And they bring in Amanda Waller to break this hypnotic spell he's under. And he goes on another rampage and then quickly slips into a coma. Now, issue 28 happens. And that is the infamous first date issue of Ice and Guy Gardner. So at this point, I'm freaking out. Like, I've got to know what happens to my most favorite superhero. Loved his 24, 25-issue series, whatever it was. Loved him in the Justice League. I've got to know what happens to him. So issue 29 comes. And they bring in Kent Nelson, the former Dr. Fate, to break this spell. He goes inside Blue Beetle's mind and finds women. That's it. Blue Beetle is so vacuous, even though he's a genius, even though he's a capable superhero. The only thing the guys can think about is women. Kent Nelson successfully rescues him from this problem. And of course now, because, I mean, the Queen Bee has hit them so close to home, Blue Beetle and his comrades in the Justice League are going to go get some justice, right? No, they're going to let their friends in Justice League Europe handle it. And that is my answer. I was all set for this wonderful undertaking by the Justice League to, like, you know, slip through this malaise of hilarity and finally be capable heroes. They had the reason, and they just chose to keep going with the jokes. Now, hey, I loved the Justice League, and I continued to collect it. I have every single issue, but this was the point where the buffoonery started to kind of wear thin for me. So that's my answer. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Chicks, man. Am I right, Joe Patrick?
Tell me about it, brother.
Oh, don't get me started. I don't remember the storyline.
You know what? They did a lot of wacky stuff in that run of Justice League.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a vague memory of Beetle's mind being full of women, like bikini-clad women.
All right.
Yeah, just because the dude loves the chicks.
Mine's all bikini girls with machine guns. That's just how I do it.
That's weird.
It's a Cramp song. Bikini girls with machine guns. You don't know that one? Of course you don't.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Thank you for your call, Anthony. Joe Patrick knows more about the Justice League and Justice League Europe than I did, so I'm afraid I'm going to have to defer to him on that one. But I assume it was a rather disappointing ending.
You know what? I loved it at the time, but yeah, it's pretty silly.
Doc Buzzard hits us with his weekly MP3. He didn't go to school for 8 years to be called Mr. Buzzard. Take it away, sir.
Hello, Joe and Matt. It's Dr. Buzzard. I missed you, boys. Answering your question of the week, what comic book series had a strong run but ended horribly? My answer for you is Ultimatum. Of course it's Ultimatum. What series shows Dr. Doom dying the way he did? That ever-loving blue-eyed thing squashing his head like a tomato? No. Having a tidal wave take everyone in New York. Now that there was brilliant. For having the Wasp's head bitten off by the Blob. And then having the Blob been bitten off by Giant Man. No, can't have that. No, you can't have that at all. This series started off strong, and the art by David Finch was absolutely magnanimous. It was beautiful. I loved it. But this series was absolutely terrible towards the end. There was too many heroes dying. Made it insignificant. Just boring. That's my answer, boys. Until next time, ta-ta for now.
The dude gets creepier every week. Seriously.
So true.
Ultimatum. That was Ultimate Comics Ultimatum. When was that? 5-6 years ago?
Yeah.
Something like that.
His British accent's getting better.
It's getting much better. Like, to the point where I think maybe he's actually British. But he did say the art was magnanimous and not magnificent. So magnanimous meaning like, oh, yeah, it gets along pretty well with everybody.
I don't think you know what magnanimous means either, so you're no one to talk.
For sure.
Whatever.
Regardless, Ultimatum.
Ultimatum was terrible all around, so.
I remember the Blob eating, yeah, magnanimous, very generous, forgiving, especially toward a rival or someone less powerful than oneself. There you go. I remember the Blob eating Wasp.
Blob ate the Wasp, yeah.
I don't remember Giant Man biting the Blob's head off, though. It doesn't seem like it may have been written by someone who's ever read anything starring Hank Pym. I don't know.
Well, it was written by Jeff Loeb, so figure that one out.
This is Ultimate Hank Pym. That guy, he'd bite anybody's head off. Literally. Good suggestion. Ultimatum. Although, I would argue, didn't start strong either. That's just me. All right. Batter up, Randy Andrews. Your next buddy. Sending us an MP3 from his smoking den where he's just getting done writing something important.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week. This week, you asked us what we thought of a series that we liked in the beginning, but left us kind of flat in the end.
I like how Randy's never happy.
I was thinking of the short-lived miniseries with Monkey Man and O'Brien. It started out really, really fun, with two characters whom were thrown into each other's lives, a giant ape and a woman who gets super strength and becomes larger because of an accident. And yet they're thrown together, they work well together, and they have to battle similar villains that they never knew about before. But in the end of this short-lived three-part miniseries, it ended abruptly, and you never really found out what happened. The only way to really know was to read the other tales from Dark Horse. And those are really hard to come by. So that series just kind of left me kind of flat. I enjoyed it to start with, but in the end, I was like, where's the rest of it? So that's my rant today, and I hope you enjoyed it. And the music this week I've chosen is from The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies, and this track is called Mithril. Check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.blogspot.com, and we'll see you in a week. Bye for now.
Talking about ending abruptly. Jeez. So Randy, I know this for a fact, bought all the Monkey Man and O'Brien issues that they had at Legend recently.
I don't know that that's true.
He did. He did. I can't remember who told me about that, but he definitely did. And his problem was it ended very suddenly. It did end very suddenly. He's right. But they did finish the story like in Dark Horse Presents. And I think that's what he's saying is hard to find.
Sure. Well, you know what? I guess I can't fault him then. If you're going to buy a miniseries, you expect it to have an ending.
No, he's right. He's absolutely right. And it didn't end. And they sort of just teased you into buying some Dark Horse Presents later. I don't know what the deal was with it, but yeah, it did just kind of stop. And I remember I really liked it too. It was
Art Adams.
It was Art Adams. Thank you. I love Art Adams. And Art Adams loves drawing monkeys.
Oh, yeah.
It's his favorite thing in the whole world.
Thank you for your call, Randy. I've never read Monkey Man and O'Brien.
Fun stuff. You should.
Maybe I won't. Maybe I won't rush to it.
Maybe I won't. I've never read it. Maybe I won't.
Well, not if it stinks.
Don't be a baby. Let's go back to the phone lines here. We have a voicemail from unknown caller. Sounds very.
I'm excited.
Mysterious.
Oh boy.
Hello, two-headed nerd dude. This is Dave Yawn. I'm calling in for the question of the week. It's my first time calling, so I'm a little nervous. But first off, I just wanted to say how much I enjoy your podcast. I've been listening on and off during 2014 and coming up on back episodes. Now, for the answer to the question, I think the most good-looking comic book characters are definitely Magneto and the Joker. Magneto, a.k.a. Eric Magnus Lyncher, a.k.a. Max Eisenhart, is such a hottie, man. He's over 80 years old. He has a nice sculpted body. Just look at his muscles rippling beneath a skin-tight costume. And have you seen his sleeveless Marvel Now outfit? He's got some killer biceps. His muscular physique combined with his gorgeous white locks and intense grayish blue eyes make him even more irresistibly sexy.
What are we talking
Personality
about?
Personality is also enough to make you swoon. Dark, tragic, ambitious, powerful. I want him to bend my metal.
Whoa!
Second up is the Joker. His thin, beautiful figure, sexy thumb bone face, hypnotic eyes, luscious green locks, breathtaking smile, and long fingers. And damn, does he know how to rock a stylish suit. Joker would definitely be a great kisser. With perfect scarlet lips, so inviting. Anyway, I could go on for a while about all these studs, but I'll leave it at that. Keep up the great work. Davion out. Peace.
Davion, thank you for your call, buddy. But I don't think we asked that question. So, welcome aboard. Let's start there. We didn't really ask question, but I really like your answers. You know,
he went in his own direction.
He did. Those are some good-looking dudes. He's absolutely right. I love that.
Is the Joker a good looking dude?
I mean, like, maybe some people think he's cute. Apparently those creepy lips look very kissable. I don't know. I never found him personally attractive. Now, Magneto, good looking dude. He is not a bad looking Jew. Let me tell you that boy, huh? Davion, thank you for your call. Thank you for making up your own question. Like we said, there's no rules here. All we ask is that you play by the rules. That's it. Other than that, no rules.
Our completely arbitrary rules.
All right, let's go back to Lincoln, Nebraska, neighbor of Omaha, a scant 50 miles away. I think I know who this is.
You know what? Trivia fact. Trivia Elise fact. Does not live in Lincoln. She lives in Omaha.
Oh, but she has a Lincoln phone number.
She just, that's from back in the day. She just hasn't changed her number over.
She's holding on to her Lincoln roots.
This is what you get when you keep trying to pinpoint people.
I like knowing where they are, you know? Take it away, Elise.
Well, that's for us to know.
Hello, nerds. It's Elise Wisdom, And before we get into this week's answer, I do want to verify that Drunk Elise and Sober Elise are very different people. Drunk Elise is a lot nicer. Sober Elise is kind of a bitch. And with that, let's get into it. My pick this week is once again the X-Men, but this time it's an actual comic. I know, right? In 2013, I found out about a new X-Men series with an all-female cast and got really excited. I like the X-Men. I'm a female. I want to see strong, sexy ladies being badass. Sign me up. I picked up the first issue and got pretty jazzed about the next one. The second issue came out and was, all right, I guess. Then the third one came out, and oh boy, I'm ready, and the arc is over. That was it. And now we watch Jubilee being a vampire teen mom while cuddly Uncle Wolverine buys her a house. I signed up for superhero ladies being super badass, and I was pretty disappointed. I quit reading after issue number 4 and haven't been back since. I wanted explosions and Rogue punching a guy so hard he swallows his own eye. What I got was a short, uninteresting arc that failed to keep me interested in the rest of the series and made me feel pandered to as a member of the female gender. Chicks like explosions, too. So, Joe Patrick, mind setting aside a copy of Bitch Planet for me? That sounds more my speed. Thanks for the time, gentlemen. Wisdom out.
Pull a copy of Bitch Planet for release.
Consider it done.
All right, then.
I totally know what she means. I did not care about that X-Men run.
You know, and that's Brian Wood, right?
Yeah,
man,
not great.
And we love Brian Wood, but I'm with you. I've tried to get into that run like 3 different times with 3 different stories, and each time just kind of went, don't need it.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I mean, it was completely superfluous as a title. It was, let's keep this book around for no good ending it and letting it go away and just having 2 X-Men books.
Yeah, complete. Yeah, I totally
we gotta
agree.
Have. Self-titled X-Men for no reason. I'm done with it.
I don't give a shit about Jubilee on a good day. Vampire Jubilee? Oh, man. I could care less. That is just stupid, man.
Well, Vampire Jubilee cares about you, Matt.
I'm sure she does. Let's go back to the phone lines. We got another homegrown guy here. I'm not sure who it is, though. Somebody right here from Omaha.
Hey, there is Joe, the casual comic guy. On the question of the week.
Oh, welcome back,
so
Joe.
I have a 2-part answer to a 1-part question. There's 2 stories that really let me down, and both in the same way. Girls by the Lunar Brothers was really cool. The series was Under the Dome before Under the Dome was even a Hershey bar in Stephen King's back pocket. Weirdly, I kind of feel like spoiler alerts are still in effect on this one, so I don't want to have ends until later. So, spoiler alert, people. In addition, Rising Stars was an awesome series. It started off with a massive whodunit before evolving into a really kick-ass deconstruction of the sci-fi superhero genre. I don't know what happened. Apparently, J. Michael Straczynski had problems with the publisher. At that point, all I was caring about was the delay in the books. But now that I look back on it, man, the ending was so bad. All I can think was that he wanted to get back at the publisher by effing up the end of the book. So, spoiler alert again, both series ended with a weird, stupid, recursive inseminating another planet to repeat the same business that just went down through this whole series. It's like, we just followed you for several issues, and now it's all starting over again. Heads up, man. If you're a writer and your story is not the girl and the tiger, you need to resolve the plot. Give us an ending that's real, people. Thanks for all you do, nerds. Love your podcast. Hope you have a great podcast here.
Everything else is going to suck, but this podcast here should be okay.
Talking about not sticking the landing.
Joe, love you too, buddy. You're very special to us, and it's nice to hear you again. He stole my answer. Rising Stars stole my answer.
So Joe called in with 2 answers, which is against the rules.
It's against the rules, but
however, both of them end in the same way, so I'll allow it.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. He was clever enough to work them into one similar ugly ending. So we'll count it.
I didn't read Girls. It made me feel icky.
It was weird, man. I read it for a while. I felt icky. I kept reading it because I'm used to that feeling. And it did not end well. I'll say that. It ended rather poorly. And I went, I think I'm done with the Lunar Brothers.
I like them off and on, man. Like, I really liked The Sword.
Yeah.
I liked that series a lot.
I did too. That's why I read Girls, because I liked The Sword so much. But
no, The Sword came after. But
oh, no, it was after. You're right. It was after.
Their first one was called Ultra, and I liked that one.
Ultra was awesome.
Then there was Girls, which I wasn't into, and then The Sword, which I also thought was awesome. So I don't know, man. Now they do Alex and Ada, which is...
Haven't been reading it.
It's good. It's good.
I haven't been reading it. And you're the first person to tell me that it's good. Not that I've heard it's bad. I just haven't heard much about it. Jason Sachs, one of the smartest guys on the internet talking about comic books, sent us an MP3, and there's a little picture of him. I did not know what he looks like. He's absolutely adorable. Cutest guy ever. You should see this guy. Good to know. I prefer attractive listeners.
You're very shallow.
I'm very shallow. I'm all eyes and hair, coasting through life on my good looks. What do you got for us, Jason?
Hi, guys. Jason Sachs here at Jason Sachs on the Twitters. So first of all, quick follow-up from last week. I called the worst comeback or the most unwelcome comeback ever Mark Sanchez's return to starting quarterback status, this time with the Philadelphia Eagles. Based on his performance last Sunday against the Seahawks, he can keep quarterbacking the Eagles.
Yeah, you kicked the hell out of him.
96-yard passing performance. Let's just say I hope that the Seahawks play the Eagles in the playoffs this year. Secondly, in terms of the most unwelcome comeback, I got to say, really, any DC character that was revived without allowing the second generation character to live on. So that's Kyle as Green Lantern, Wally as Flash, Dick Batts, Connor as Green Arrow. They're all just kind of evidence of DC's lack of confidence in change. Come on, it's the most conservative thing you could possibly do to bring back the iconic heroes. Let people move on. It's all right, DC. It's all right. Third, I want to talk about this week's question, and my answer is a little thing that came out in 1993 called Deathmate. Deathmate was a crossover that teamed the characters from Valiant Comics, which at the time was one of the hottest comic lines in the country, with those of the newly formed Image Comics. Bringing the characters into one collaborative universe, both the Image and Valiant staffs would have full reign over the characters. There would be a prologue and an epilogue, and both companies would produce two center books each, featuring a color scheme instead of an issue number. Valiant's issues, blue and yellow, came out on time. Image's Black would follow a few months later, only a little bit late. But months would pass by as the readers waited for Deathmate Red to be published by Rob Liefeld. Not only was this late, but Valiant people didn't want to actually be involved with it. As Bob Layton recalls, Valiant funder Steve Masarsky shoved the project down his throat because he and Jim Lee were friends and he wanted it to happen, and who cares about the sales of it or anything? What ended up happening because of Deathmate and the Deathmate Red in particular not coming out is that Valiant sales dropped from a peak of 1 million copies an issue in 1992 to 75,000 by the end of the summer of 1993. An absurd drop. Also, because so many copies were left in the hands of, so much money, rather, I should say, was left in the hands of dealers from not selling Deathmate Red, it brought about quite a few stores going broke. So, good job, Rob Liefeld. What started as some crazy man's great idea turned out to destroy the comics industry. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Boom, Jason Sachs. Dropping bombs on Deathmate. Yeah, it was famous. It also, like, also famous for having, like, all manner of, like, weird covers and foil-embossed bullshit. It was terrible.
Yeah, Deathmate Black, I think, is the first appearance of Gen 13.
I think that's correct.
And they were called Gen X at the time, and they had to change it because Marvel was getting ready to launch Generation X.
Well, why would that be a problem? I don't understand.
Like, because really, that's what corporate...
They didn't think about that, though. Like, come on, you guys, you know?
Because that's what comic companies do, man.
God, it's just terrible.
DC sued Fawcett Comics because Captain Marvel was too similar to Superman. And then when they won, they bought Captain Marvel and used him for themselves.
That's true. But save that for save that for our most ironic comic book court decision question.
Yeah, we're not doing that. We're not doing that question. Jason Sachs will be the only caller.
That's true. And it'll be a long one too. Jason, thank you for your call. That was awesome. You didn't have to worry about Mark Sanchez. There you go, buddy. You're fine. And I totally agree about what you said about all the old DC heroes replacing the new ones. And then the new ones getting replaced by the old ones. It was terrible. Just terrible.
It's fun while it lasts.
I suppose. How many damn doctors do we have calling this show? We've got Doc Buzzard, and here we got Doc Flux.
We've got Dr. Carlos Danger, but he never calls in.
He never calls. He just threatens us on Twitter. That friggin' guy.
Oh, hey guys, this is Doc Flux from Vader Comics. You'll have to excuse my voice, I have to disguise it. I am currently in the witness protection program with the FBI over some matters that I can't discuss outside of a courtroom. But anyway, I wanted to get back to you guys on this new question. I have a selection for this, and it's a somewhat recent story. It's by Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy. That's right, I'm talking about The Wake. This book started off very strong. Paced like a good old-fashioned retro sci-fi horror flick a la Aliens or The Abyss, with a distinguishable cast of characters forced to deal with each other in a confined underwater facility completely disconnected from the outside world. And worst-case scenario happens with alien creatures. There's a clear sense of what's going on, and it's awesome. So is Murphy's art, which remains awesome even when Scott Snyder does what he often does with all of his stuff, blows a perfectly good measured story so far out of proportion that it bloats into a spectacle souffle. They jump into the future and we meet a girl and her dolphin, which is fine, but then Snyder injects this huge cast of characters that all blend in with each other. They're all like blah 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 blah, destiny this and that, and then a new major villain is thrown in there with 4 issues left to the series. Nobody gets developed. It's just big set pieces on Waterworld minus Kevin Costner and a sense of what the hell is going on. Anyways, total letdown. Give me a nice chilling tale about a diverse team of characters and leave out the post-apocalyptic adventures of Baron Munchausen. That is my gripe today. Now if you'll excuse me, I'm being moved to another safe house. Back to the two-headed nerd.
Doc, I'd like to say I can't relate, but I've been there myself, buddy. Thanks for calling in, though. In between being moved around, it's very sweet of you getting back for us. Thank you, buddy.
I can't say I totally disagree.
I did not finish The Wake, but I did hear a lot of those same complaints.
It takes a complete left turn halfway through the book. And I mean, overall, I liked the experience, but I'd be lying if I said that I wouldn't have enjoyed it better if they had stuck with the deep sea horror theme.
Yeah, you got to wonder why it would change. Why, like, I don't understand. What's the point? Like, did they think that they were going to continue, or did they, like, I don't get it.
No, it was always a 10-issue mini. This was his plan from the beginning. You didn't finish it, so you don't know exactly how it ends. No. But what happened in the beginning, what happened at the in the first half relates to what happens in the second half. But yeah, I can totally see where Doc's coming from.
It's too bad.
Maybe he's got a problem.
I don't know. Maybe he has trouble finishing.
Gross.
Yeah, I have trouble starting. Joe Patrick himself was nice enough to pass on Wooly Toot's call. I'm not sure what that was about, but he got here.
It's because Wooly Toot's emails, for some reason, are not getting through.
Why doesn't he just sign up for a Gmail account?
He texted it to me and I emailed it.
Oh, weirdo. Let's see what he's got for us.
Hey, it's Toots. And before I get to my answer, I want to comment on your comparing of the new Star Wars teaser to the Phantom Menace trailer. I think it's a little unfair that you did that, mainly because of hindsight. You can't tell me that when the Phantom trailer came out, you didn't watch it over and over again, and you didn't thrill to it, and you didn't get excited, and that the Duel of Fates, the choir stuff you commented on, didn't sound awesome to you. The Duel of Fates is an incredible piece of music.
It wasn't Duel of Fates.
Plus, I was at the midnight viewing, the premiere, and I saw Matt Baum get up in front of the crowd, introduce the movie, and say how excited he was for it.
I was getting paid to do that!
If you're the type of person that let the prequels destroy your love for the Star Wars universe, you did not love Star Wars enough to begin with.
Ooh.
Rant over. Now, when it comes to limited series and stuff like that, I tend to read them in trade. I don't read them from month to month. So, and I don't really get too invested because these are the type of things that have no lasting effect ever. Every superhero book will return to the status quo, and you have that safety. So whatever. But Secret Invasion has to be the one that I remember straight in my head right now that bummed me out the way it ended. That final issue was really jarring, and like the Wasp gets killed, but they don't really ever show it. You get told it in flashbacks. I think the entire issue was like a recap. Like, you didn't even get to see what happened. You just were told what happened. I was also very disappointed because I seriously thought and was hoping that they would beat the Skrulls using Hostess fruit pies, like in all the advertisements I read growing up in the 70s and 80s. Oh, also, did you notice that the X-Wings in the trailer, they changed the wings so that they now snap together like puzzle pieces instead of laying on top of each other? That is way radical. A good evening, gentlemen.
I didn't notice that about the X-Wings. I'm sticking with our comparison, though. I'm standing by it. Because we didn't say that it was terrible and we hated it at the time. We said, looking at it now compared to this, it does not look or sound like Star Wars. That's what we said.
And he is mistaken. Like, the choir stuff that you were talking about at the beginning was not the Duel of the Fates.
Yeah. Yes. What was it? It was just another piece of music, right?
It was just like angelic voices. It was not the Duel of the Fates from the lightsaber battle.
Yeah.
That would have been exciting.
True. Not that.
I would have been into that.
Secret Invasion.
Yeah, you know, I guess I never thought about it.
Secret Invasion totally petered out. It started so strong and it completely petered out.
I kind of agree about the death of the Wasp. The fruit pies thing would have been super fun, but of course ridiculous.
Or if Twinkie the Kid showed up and shot all the Skrulls or something. Huge Twinkie the Kid guy, you know, I can't help it.
Willie Toots, we thank you so much for your call. We're gonna hear more from you this weekend.
It's true. We're not going to tell them why, though. It's going to be, we'll keep it quiet. Andrea Shockling calls in for our final call.
Hi, guys. It's Andrea at Andrea Shock on the Twitters and one half of Comics Therapy. And I'm super late this week. Super, super late. I'm sorry. I'm late for you, but I'm also late for hockey practice. So, I mean, in general, I'm a hot mess. Much, in fact, like the book that I'm calling to tell you about. Instead of going to hockey, I'm sitting in my driveway right now because I'm compelled to speak to you about polarity. Max Bemis wrote this miniseries about 2 years ago, and it started out really strong, like this honest, visceral portrayal of mental illness in a comic, in a mainstream comic, the way that you don't really see except in like bio comics or like small indie mini comics. I was enthralled. I was excited. The art was fantastic. And I felt like, wow, I can't wait to see where this is going to go. And it turns out I could wait. And in fact, I still am because I never finished the series. It was such a disappointment. It went completely in a different direction. It turned into this bullshit superhero origin story using the character's mental illness a bit like a catalyst, but not in a way that was empowering or compelling in a new and fascinating way like I felt we were going towards in that first issue. It ended up being probably like the biggest letdown in terms of comic story development that I can think of in recent memory, with some events, big two events, as obvious other exceptions. But honestly, when I think about like a series that started and it just didn't live up to the expectations of the story development, like Polarity is it. It's the only time that I felt like, man, am I still reading the same book? This has nothing to do with what was set up. And it was frustrating as hell. And, you know, ultimately, like I said, I didn't finish it. So there you go. Happy drinking. Happy comics. Happy holidays. Don't read Polarity. I hope you guys are well. I'm going to go to hockey now. Bye.
Okay, so one of Andrea's kid plays hockey. She's not a hockey player, right? I'm not trying to make
no her. Her son Avi plays hockey.
Avi plays hockey. Okay, I didn't think like Andrea had this like live. She's like, yeah, she's a defenseman. You know, like, no shit.
Maybe she does play hockey.
Andrea is certainly tough enough to play hockey. You loved Polarity.
I never read Polarity.
I thought you didn't. You read the first issue and you loved it. You reviewed it.
I didn't read. No, I didn't.
Yeah, you remember Max Bemis, the guy from the what's the band he's in? Yes.
Say anything?
No. Yes.
No, I did not review Polarity.
I thought you reviewed it and you liked it.
No, you reviewed it.
What was the one I was thinking of that you really liked? It was another rock star.
Buzzkill.
Buzzkill. That was the one you liked. I apologize for hoisting that upon you.
No, Buzzkill's awesome.
Buzzkill was good. I did read Polarity and I don't remember at all. It was gone from my head, so it couldn't have been anything I needed. I don't know. I think I gave it a skim it, if I recall correctly. Andrea, it's good to hear from you. But hockey practice is serious, yes, and you got to get there on time, or your coach is going to yell at you, okay?
I'm looking at the show notes for episode 110.
How could you possibly find that so fast? We're on episode 189.
Because I have Google and it's real easy. You reviewed Polarity number one in your ludicrous speed reviews, okay, but thank you very much for attributing it to me.
I was thinking of Buzzkill. That's what I was thinking. You really liked Buzzkill.
Yes, we both liked Buzzkill.
Favorite call.
You know what? I'm going to give my favorite call to Jason Sachs.
I think I am too.
Because he came up with an example that actually did damage to the comics industry.
Yeah. Yeah. His was not just a bad story. His was a bad idea, period. Like for the real world. You know?
Jason's pick potentially ruined lives.
And it truly was like the tipping point. Definitely. It was the end of the boom where everybody was just like, this can no longer continue. You have broken it, Rob Liefeld. How dare you?
But I thought Andrea's call was also very good about, I remember that people being very excited about Polarity at the beginning, about how it used mental illness, you know, it showcased it in a different way.
Right.
And to hear that it kind of spun out into something like she described is disappointing.
Yeah. Too bad. Joe Patrick.
That's what you get when you let rock stars write comic books.
Even though they are all mentally ill. It's true. 100% of them. Joe Patrick, do you have an answer to this question?
Yes, I do.
Let's hear it.
My answer is Wanted by Mark Miller and J.G. Jones.
I should have saw that coming.
Wanted was a story about a young man who is kind of a failure, like a non-starter, really, like somebody who never grew up, who was living paycheck to paycheck, living this meaningless life. His girlfriend's cheating on him. And he discovers that he is the son of a supervillain when his father is murdered. And so he is taken into this secret order, and you find out that they secretly rule the world. They dispatched all the superheroes long ago, and they made the world forget that there were ever superheroes or supervillains. And they just kind of secretly run things like an evil Illuminati. And I won't get into spoilers beyond that, other than to say that book ends with Mark Miller telling his audience what idiots they are for supporting his work. And for what a way, like what a waste of time it's been. What are you doing buying this comic book? And it's got like the worst final page of any modern comic that I can think of. And I'm not going to tell you what it is, because this is a family show, But if you haven't read Wanted, or if you haven't heard about how that ending goes down, look it up, because it's seriously insulting.
It is certainly a middle finger to the reader. It certainly is.
And that might not be what he was going for. He may have been trying to, you know, give some sort of insult slash inspirational, like, what are you doing with your life kind of thing, which is how the movie kind of plays out.
Right.
But instead, it reads as a, what are you doing buying this comic book? You're an idiot. The end. And I finished that book and was disgusted. But it started going downhill way earlier when, I recognize that it's a book about villains, but it gets into some real problematic territory where, like, Wesley, the main character, is talking about how he ran across this female police officer and, you know, he didn't feel anything, right? He didn't want to hurt her. He didn't feel anything, you know, it wasn't revving his engine. And then the guy he's talking to goes, well, did you at least rape her? And from there, I went, hold on a minute. What's happening?
They were bad.
And I get it. But, like, the second they use, like, the rape of human beings as shorthand for evil.
Right.
Like, it pulls me right out of it. And it was just downhill from there. So, yeah, Wanted, man. It's a real bummer.
Okay. It was a bummer of an ending. All right.
What do you got?
I'm going with actually one of my favorite writers. I'm going with Grant Morrison's Final Crisis. Final Crisis, they led up to for almost like 2 years. And you had Dan DiDio, who was editor-in-chief at the time of DC, telling everyone that they were dropping all these hints to, like, stuff that was coming in Final Crisis. And it was going to be so big. And there were all these, like, posters that were released. We were looking at going, what does all this mean? Oh, my God. And they even had a countdown to Final Crisis storyline that, like,
Jeff, which is terrible.
Awful. It was like Paul Dini was one of the head writers. And there's a bunch of other people that wrote it, too. And, like,
Paul Dini was involved. Yeah.
Yeah. And they basically told you there's, like, this is all going to lead up to Grant Morrison's Final Crisis. So I read it because I love Grant Morrison and I want to see what's going on. And it sucked. It absolutely sucked. It ended up costing more than $150 if you wanted to get on board for all the issues. And then the very first issue of Final Crisis basically wipes everything that happened in Countdown and Final Crisis clean. Just goes, nope, none of that happened. Also at the same time, Batman RIP was happening, which was another Grant Morrison storyline, which by the title, you would think Batman's going to die. But we needed Batman to die a completely different way in Final Crisis. You know? And it just, I was so excited for this story.
I think I read that editorial at DC really jerked him around with Batman RAP. Like, it was supposed to end, I think, with the death of Batman. But DC editorial was like, oh, no, we have to save this for our event book that's coming up.
Oh, it had to have. It was that.
And so he had to, like, really mess things around to get it to fit.
Either that or Grant Morrison went insane. Those are your two choices, because it did not make any sense whatsoever. Batman didn't die in RIP, and then, like, literally the next month died in Final Crisis, which just deflated any part of the death whatsoever. And there was, like, some big ideas and there was some pretty cool stuff that did happen. But at the same time, it was so bizarre and so time spanning. And they tried to do all these other, like, there were these side stories. Like, there was a Superman side story where he was fighting, like, this war world planet or whatever.
He was fighting one of the monitors that became evil and turned into, like, a cosmic vampire.
Yeah, that's Nix Yutan or something like that.
No, it was like, no, Nix Wotan was in it, but I think Mandrak was the villain.
Something like that. But, like, that's another one that totally switched gears in the very end, where all of a sudden we're like, well, what?
I'll give you that, because I think that Final Crisis number 6 is the death of Batman.
Yes.
And then you have to read those Superman issues, that two-issue Superman series.
Right.
Because when it picks up with the next issue, all of a sudden, instead of fighting Darkseid and all that stuff, they're fighting Mandrake.
Yeah, it totally switched. It, like, the whole thing was this huge buildup to Darkseid, and all of a sudden, nope, giant space planet vampire thing is the bad guy. Out of nowhere.
I think that if you buy the Final Crisis collection, it's got those two Superman issues like edited in where they belong.
Yeah, they put them in the collection because it made so little sense. I was just like devastated. I was so upset at that time. And people were like calling for Dan DiDio's head. They wanted him fired. And everyone blamed editorial at the time. And it had to have been because Grant Morrison was writing Batman and doing a great job on Batman. And as weird as Batman was, it made some sense until it just completely fell apart with Final Crisis. And then it was just completely nonsensical. And Final Crisis fell apart, like imploded in on itself. It was so bad. It was so bad.
I agree. It was not good.
At some point, I'd like to revisit it, like, as the collected edition like that, just to see if it makes any sense. But I remember like closing the final book and going, if I had to sum this up in a paragraph as to what happened, I think I would just throw the book in someone's face and say, that's what it felt like. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. I think that after a year of Countdown was so bad.
It was terrible.
That by the time Final Crisis actually hit, I don't think people cared. Like, no. I went into Final Crisis thinking, okay, well, how can they salvage the garbage that Countdown put out there? And Final Crisis number two was the return of Barry Allen. That's where he makes his comeback.
Yep. And everyone groaned.
You know, like you said, it's got elements that are cool. Yeah. Like Barry Allen is chasing. He's trying to catch a bullet fired from the future backwards through time. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty badass.
That's awesome.
But the Darkseid storyline ends with Batman using a gun to murder him.
Pretty much.
I feel like this is the guy that just spent 6 years writing Batman, and he ends it with Batman shooting him with a gun. That's not Batman.
And not to mention the Omega Beam hits Batman. It doesn't kill him. It sends him back in time.
Well, that's kind of the Omega Beams do lots of different things, but
just deflating. That's all it was. And it had nothing to do with Countdown to Infinite Crisis. Nothing that happened in that book affected anything in Infinite Crisis.
There was some stuff like the Mary Marvel turning evil thing carried over to Final Crisis, but
yeah,
for the most part, you're right. It was all lead up to nothing. And then Countdown to Infinite Crisis hit its big finale, and it ultimately couldn't really mean much because it was carrying into a new event.
Yeah.
So you couldn't do anything crazy big in it because you'd overshadow the event that you were just starting.
Right.
As opposed to 52, which followed the event.
And 52 right? was a lot of fun. I liked 52.
Yeah, I did like 52. You ruined everything
when you smiled. Whew, this is a good one. This is a really good one. Man, I have a headache from ranting, but that was fun. I like that one a lot. Thank you, everybody that called. Thank you, our first-time callers that called in and made up their own damn question. That was fun, too. And if you were trying to call another podcast, I don't care. I loved it. Regardless, we have another question of the week. It is up now in the THN forums. People are already calling us. It's awesome. Joe Patrick, what is the question?
This week's question comes from Jason Sachs, who asks, in the spirit of the holidays, what is the best comic-related gift you have ever received?
In the spirit of the holidays, I am not going to be in town, but I'm going to call in, and I'm going to answer.
Good for you, buddy.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be totally awesome. We will have another exciting episode of the Two-Headed Nerd comic book podcast going up this weekend, and we hope to hear from you guys who haven't called. We want to hear more first-time callers. We want to hear some old friends that we haven't heard from for a while. Hit us back up. Let us know what your favorite comic book-themed Christmas gift was, and we'll all look back on the ghosts of Christmas past together and just smile. It'll be great. Huh? No more of this negativity, at least not for 1 week. Thank you so much for everybody that called. It's your show, and it's no good without you. But for now, this is the Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
This is Twinkie the Kid. Ever wonder how they get that creamy filling into the middle of a Twinkie's cake? Well, these kids have some pretty good ideas.